Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'ahotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, I thank you for tuning in tonight. This, of course, is a special broadcast. We are going to talk about the issue of Troy Davis. Of course, Troy Davis is scheduled to be executed on Wednesday. And so this program tonight is to kind of bring attention to what's going on with his case, or not attention, but really something a bit more critical than that. And that is, of course, the actions and the various things that are presently in progress as we speak in order to save Brother Troy Davis's life. Now, for those who are not familiar with the case, well, please make certain that you stay in tune, because in about, 15 minutes or so, we are going to talk extensively about this case. Joining us very shortly is going to be a brother who has been on our radio program a couple of times. His name is Brother Kalanji. Brother Kalanji, of course, represents a group and a movement really called the FTP movement, which is for the people. And, of course, Brother Kalanji is also involved with the Black August Coordination, both in Atlanta and on the East Coast side. And he's also been involved in some other kinds of activities in terms of freeing political prisoners and just an array of things. So the bottom line is the brother has been very active in a lot of social political issues, justice, and definitely those things that are relevant to African liberation. So we're going to be talking with Brother Kalanji very soon. And we're going to also welcome back Brother Steve Biko. Of course, Brother Steve Biko was on our show not too long ago talking about, of course, the 10-10-50 program. And you're going to be hearing more about that as well as we continue on, not just for tonight's show, but, of course, in future shows or for future shows, because we are going to be adopting some segment of the 10-10-50 program as part of the Million Woman Movement. Okay, so we're going to definitely make sure you have more information about that. Now, before we go any further, as usual, we always want to give thanks and praises to our Creator, and certainly be very, very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. And so we are tonight, of course, just making certain that we do our part in continuing the dialogue, in continuing the kind of energy and helping to, matriculate it and have it moving the way that it needs to move in terms of the discussion, the actions, and so forth as it pertains to Troy Davis. So let me see. We've been having a little bit of problem tonight with our boards. Sometimes, that does happen. It looks like we might have things kind of straightened out for now. But in the event, for whatever reason, if we should get disconnected, because, we're dealing with technology, so anything can happen. But if for some reason that should happen, we suggest that you just dial back, or if you're online, just, reboot, or, let us reboot. And usually we're able to get back within a period of 3 to 5 minutes or so. So, just so you know, if in the event we should have a little bit of disruption for whatever reason, again, just, check back with us within a few moments, and 9 times out of 10, we will be reset up and ready to go again. Okay, before we begin going to our live lines, we want you to know that in about 5 minutes or so, we are going to open up the chat room, because we definitely want you to be able to post whatever information that you may have. If there's something going on in your city, in your community, in reference to Troy Davis, tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, by all means, please post that information, because we want to make sure that people know, no matter where you're at, throughout the country, there's things going on. And certainly, if there's not something going on in your particular area, there are still things that you can do. So we're going to talk more about that very shortly as well, because, again, there's petitions, there is phone calls that can be made, there are emails that can be sent, and more than likely, for those who do faxing, there will be faxing available or faxes that can be sent as well. Now, what we do know is that there is a clemency hearing coming up, and again, we're going to get more information about that when Brother Kalonji calls in, and he will brief us on that. And then after we talk with Brother Kalonji, we're going to talk with Brother Stephen Biko, who also, both of them are in the Atlanta area. They're on the ground. They're doing organizing. I think Brother Kalonji, when I talked with him earlier today, he is not only organizing in Atlanta, but I think he was also moving, you know, further south, going into Louisiana and so forth. And again, making certain that people are directly involved in this campaign, in this whole struggle, and making certain that Brother Troy Davis is able to get clemency. And that's really what it's down to. There are no more appeals that can be obtained. It's really now clemency that has to be obtained. And it's unfortunate that we are kind of down at the wire for this, but certainly this is what is happening. So again, tonight's program is primarily going to talk about the issue of Troy Davis, the proposed execution. But one thing we want to also talk about tonight, and again, we're going to open up that chat room for you. One of the things we want to talk about and also have you call into the show later on about is this whole issue, this whole thing on the prison industrialized complex. You know, I went to a rally on Friday, and of course on Friday there were several rallies going on nationwide for Troy Davis to, you know, make certain that people were out in the streets protesting, letting their voices be heard, in terms of them knowing that this is not only an injustice, this is just a crime. I mean, this is just, it's incredible with the type of information that is now available in regard to the people who have recanted their stories, the various people who said they literally saw someone else. I mean, you know, there's no way that we could just sit back and let them do this. We have to make sure we do everything possible. And so when I went to the demonstration or the rally on Friday, it was one that was really called again on a national level. And as usual, what I was able to see, and of course, it should be a multi-racial or multicultural groups or participation, because with the issue of human rights, of course, that applies to everyone. But what I've saw over the past years, and I'm really kind of sick and tired of it, and it is that we cannot seem to do anything when it comes to issues that is known as social justice, when it comes to issues that are directly affecting black folks, African people, whatever you want to call yourself. Why must there always be these other people? And don't get me wrong, again, I know strategically that needs to happen and so forth and so on, but to the degree where are the rallies that black folks are calling, okay? You know, from what I saw, although this was a coalition of groups that participated or brought in, you know, the rally information and so forth. In other words, it was a coalition or what have you. Okay, fine. But unfortunately, these things seem to be headed up by white people. I mean, I was trying to find a way to say this a little more gently, but it's just not going to come out any other way than the way that it really is. And that is that there just always seems to be these rainbow coalitions everywhere. And again, I know that when you're talking about saving somebody's life, you want as much visibility and as much participation and as much input as possible. But I'm just getting, again, a little fed up with the fact that black folks, African folk, our folk, are not standing up unless there's a call being put out by some white people. So, you know, that's something else that we're going to talk about tonight as well. I mean, that's not going to be the main focus, needless to say, but it is something that needs to be pointed out, and certainly I've kind of taken a different position in some things, meaning where I might have been a little kind of more laid back in expressing or conveying some of the things that I thought. I'm going to be a bit more vocal in some things now, because what I'm seeing is people are becoming so lackadaisical and so weak in their positions that it's really being detrimental to all of us as a whole. Very recently, a campaign was launched here in Philadelphia called Black Men's Engagement. Be me. And for at first, like most, I said, oh, you know, that sounds really good. Black men engagement. I mean, they were talking about black men telling their stories and, you know, how it was necessary to highlight the good that black men do. So, you know, of course, I was like, yeah, this is really, really good. But then when I kept hearing it over and over and over again on the urban radio stations, I began to realize that something is a little strange here. Why is this being like so constantly, I mean, it's just like, it's more than bombardment. And so I began to talk with some other brothers and sisters that I work with and I'm close to, and we kind of also agreed that it just was something strange about this Black Men's Engagement Project. And the idea was that they wanted black men from the ages of 14 up to send in their stories about positive black males and this and that. So we began to do a little research, and the research came up with some very interesting things. We found that the Knight Foundation, K-N-I-G-H-T Foundation, was one of the primary funders of this project, as well as something known as the Open Society. Now, when you go to Google this, you will find both of these entities are extremely interesting kinds of folk. Certainly they're white, needs to say. But they function in a very interesting way. The Knight Foundation is a part of a group which are brothers. You know, they're biological brothers from what I've been able to see. And they own several newspaper publication operations throughout the country. Now, this Black Men's Engagement thing has two target areas, and it's Philadelphia and Detroit. So that struck us as being interesting. And then we looked a little closer, and there's also a projection coming up for Georgia. So we thought that was interesting, too. Why would Philadelphia and why would Detroit at this time be the two locations where this information is being circulated, and I mean circulated vastly? Why? Well, we went to the website, and we began to examine the websites. And the we that I'm speaking of is myself and a few other folk who have now made it their business to begin to work on bringing very strong-hitting, clear, concise, factual, and definitely non-diluted, untampered, no white nonsense kinds of information, reports, and so forth, analysis and so forth. So we began to look at this stuff, and one of my brothers, the first thing he said, first of all, when do you hear a black man talking about being engaged? Okay, and I'm not talking about from an intellectual standpoint, mind you, but just in general conversation, in general context, when do you hear black men talk about being engaged? You don't. So that was your first clue that this wasn't put together by any black man, not really. So I'm just putting it out there to you briefly right now. We're going to talk a little more about it a little later on, because it's important that we pay close attention to the games that are being played today in our community under the auspices of multiculturalism and the connection of diversity and goodwill and philanthropy and all these wonderful things. It really is very, very important that we pay close attention to what is going on with that. Okay, so, you know, we'll talk more about that a little later on as well. Now, we're waiting for Brother Kalonji to call in, and I hope he does so very soon. In the meantime, we're going to give you a few announcements, okay? Let's see. We have a couple of announcements for you. And let's see, we certainly want to make sure that you know that for next month, October, there are several Million Women March projects coming up. And, of course, not just projects, but the actual official 14-year anniversary observance celebration of the largest gathering in the world of any women anywhere ever is, in fact, Million Women March. We will be celebrating and coming together next month, October, in recognition of the Million Women March, and it's now establishment of universal movement internationally. That's right. Come next month, we're going to really begin to unveil some of what we've been working on for the past couple of years, and that, of course, includes preparing to go into Africa. Yes. So we'll be able to tell you a little more about that next year, but I want to also tell you that on October the 14th and the 15th, there's a very, very important conference that's going to be taking place here, and it's called For Brothers Only. For Brothers Only is a development that's going to be ongoing. We look at having it on a traveling on a national level, but it's going to kick off here in Philadelphia, and it basically is for black men only. Only. Okay? And what I mean by that is this is not a thing about trying to be diverse in that way. This is for men of African descent. Now, it doesn't mean that those who might want to listen in on some of the dialogue in some segment, there's a community forum that's for everyone. But the conference itself is for black men, period. So this conference is to specifically address the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls. These are black men who not only are not afraid to stand up, but in fact are insisting that they do and others do as well. They have no problems with making their position clear and have made it very clear that they are now prepared to take action. So we're not only going to hear dialogue, we're not only going to be able to assess the problems and particularly the causes of why we are now seeing and have seen violence against our sisters and that being, in some cases, or in too many cases, being done or applied by a black man. Okay? So we're going to now look at that, examine it. We're going to not try to run away from it, not try to shove it underneath the rug anymore, because by doing so, it will only grow. And we know, like a cancer, if you do not get rid of it, it will spread, and ultimately it will destroy you. And so this is what is happening in our communities and in our families. We're not talking about it. We're not talking about the molestation in our communities. We're not talking about the children who wake up in the middle of the night hearing their mother beaten, hearing their mother crying, hearing their mother screaming from being battered. We're not talking about these things. But then if a black woman goes off somewhere and try to get some help, she's usually a non-dietitian. She's going to have to go to somebody's wife, because most of the kinds of agencies and so forth that offer any kind of help or support, at least surgically, are they tend to be white. So we have to now take on a greater responsibility about how we're going to conduct ourselves, how we're going to address the situation. And certainly black men have to take on the responsibility to now help to raise up the young men in a way that they understand what it is really to be a man. So this is some of the dialogue that the brothers are going to be talking about. How to develop some codes of conduct for men, for our men. One session that we had not too long ago, our brother Gary Adams, and he said something that we felt was very poignant and very on point. And the question was raised, well, what if a sister or, well, what if a female, you know, had on a certain type of attire, and attire that she had on, the clothing that she had on, it was very suggestive. It was very, like, revealing and therefore, you know, sent mixed messages or sent some other kind of messages, you know. And so the question was put out there. So if a sister is looking like that, what else would you expect? What else would she expect for it to be happening? And so Brother Gary, being the good brother that he is, he says something very, very powerful, and I will share it with you. And many of the other brothers also agreed. And even a few that didn't really want to agree, agreed, because they knew that it was on point. And it's this. He said, it doesn't matter in reality what they have on. If you're a man, that's not what's going to be the motivating factor, especially when it comes to you abusing her, when it comes to you raping her or molesting her or forcing yourself on her. There's no excuse for that. There's no justification for that. So no matter what she may wear, no matter what she may look like, it doesn't matter in reality, meaning as it pertains to what as a man, that is supposed to be about. So the bottom line is, and this is the kind of things that our brothers have to convey to our younger brothers, that, okay, perhaps she does have on something that suggests she wants attention. You have to be man enough to know that that is a problem as opposed to exploiting it and then taking advantage of it. That's not a man. And so these are the things that our brothers will be discussing with one another. These are the types of conversations, kinds of dialogues that they're going to have on October the 14th and the 15th. Now, joining us for that session is going to be Brother Imwalimu Baruti, one of our strong warrior brothers. All of the warrior brothers are really coming through on this one. You know, and those that want to be warrior brothers. But, you know, in general, any black man is welcome, okay? So let's get that clear. And this is for all races, not all races, sorry, back up. This is for all religions. This is for all walks of life, et cetera, okay? Brother Imwalimu Baruti will be joining us, Brother Alton Maddox, and also Brother Kamal Kabam. And it's really unfortunate in a way that these three brothers are coming to Philadelphia. I mean, well, let me backtrack. It's not that it's unfortunate, because we are blessed and definitely happy, and we'll welcome them in every way possible. But the fact and the truth of the matter is that the type of support that the Million Woman March has gotten in Philadelphia over the past 14 years has been minimum at best when it comes to our brothers. I mean, there are some, don't get me wrong, there have been some, But there are, let me see, what was the count that I saw earlier? Don't think I have it with me right now. But, I mean, it's like, you know, a couple of 100,000 black men in Philadelphia. So for the Men and Women March to not be able to obtain, I mean, a small fraction of that couple of 100,000, that's really saying something very significant, especially given the fact that we've been consistent from the time of our conception and been, you know, to the degree of there have been no confusion as to what we represent, how we represent it, and so forth and so on. All right. So that has remained clear during this whole time. So, again, it's kind of unfortunate, again, in that we have to now bring brothers in from other parts of the country in order to really build what it is that we want to build, because even though we're talking about the Million Woman Movement and dealing with issues that is relevant to the Million Woman Movement or million or women, our women, we still always will connect with our brothers. And so these are some of the things that we're going to be talking about during the month of October. We are really, really hoping that sisters will also now, you know, really take more of a stand in dealing with some of these issues. We're too fragmented. We have a lot of groups all over the country. Women's, our sisters are doing wonderful things all over the country in many, many, many ways. But we are not organized to the degree of reality, and we must synchronize some of this in order to be more effective on a national level, and certainly as we proceed on an international level. So, family, those are some of the things that we're going to be sharing with you in the next couple of weeks as we proceed with the Million Woman March anniversary coming up. Again, we hope that you will join us. We now have membership. We're going to be kicking off on October the 1st, one of our new memberships that will be called A Million Black Women Rising. You will be able to be an active member or a support member. And so we hope that you will definitely do that in one way or the other, a support member or an active member. And for more information, you can contact us at area code 267-636-3802. Again, 267-636-3802. Or you can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. Let's see, before we go to our next item, there was something else you want to bring to your attention. Oh, yeah, for October the 7th and the 8th. We were initially going to do it from the 7th to the 9th. This is an African Holistic Health and Healing Weekend, and it's going to feature information about how to deal with diabetes, heart, high blood pressure, and other kinds of things that are really going on in our community. We want to really begin to focus on how to deal with some of these things a bit more holistically, a bit more naturally. Okay, and so, again, if you're in the Philadelphia area, we're going to be at a location called the International House, which is located at 37th and Chestnut Street. And, again, that's going to be October the 7th and the 8th. Now, the night of October the 8th, there will be a special session for men it will be for the community, but we want our brothers, again, this is kind of a pre-session for brothers to be able to talk about this issue of violence and abuse and how it's affecting our health, okay? What's related to violence and abuse from a health perspective? So that's one of the issues that we're going to be talking about very, very candidly on October the 8th. Again, it'll take place the 7th and the 8th, but there'll be workshops and forums, and you'll also be able to get services. There will be information about Reiki, aromatherapy, how to start off being a vegetarian or just to eat a little more healthier. and things of that nature. You can also get information about products, some various products that are now proving to be very helpful to help manage and hopefully get rid of some of this dis-ease that we now have. So, again, those are some of the things that you can look forward to us having as some of the pre-activities for the 14-year anniversary of the historic Million Woman March. So, again, that's going to take place on October the 7th and the 8th. Now, of course, we kind of relinquished our initial plan of doing something on the 9th because that is the day that Mr. Farrakhan will be in Philadelphia in recognition of the 16-year anniversary of the Million Man March. And so when we initially planned our event, we were not aware that he was coming, which is a whole other issue that we'll talk about at another time. But nevertheless, we were not aware that he was coming when we first made our plans to do this weekend event. But we decided to go ahead and just, you know, just have it on the 7th and the 8th. Now, along with the African Holistic Health and Healing Weekend, there will also be combined with that a Black Women's Literary Showcase. So those sisters who have books or other kinds of written materials or what have you that they either have had published or planning to publish or what have you or want to have discussed or critiqued, they would be welcome to share that information. And, again, that's going to be on October 7th and the 8th. Okay, and lastly, we have a new event that was just added on the other day, and that new event is a gala, which is going to take place on October the 30th. A couple of our brothers are putting that together as a way to support and commemorate the Million Woman March. This is our Brothers in Support group, and they are hosting a gala event that's going to take place on October the 30th. It'll take place at the District Plaza, which is located at 3801 Market Street. Now, this particular gala is going to also feature a fashion show, and I believe we're going to have coming in from Tennessee the popular and powerful Brothers Keepers, okay, which of course is a spoken word group, very serious, conscious, revolutionary spoken word group. We did talk to one of the brothers today, and they're pretty much going to do everything possible to get here, but we're going to also have some local artists as well. So that's going to take place again on October the 30th. You will be able to go online starting tomorrow to register both for the for Brothers Only Conference and also for the October 30th gala. Okay, so if you want more information about either one of those events, please, again, contact National MWM at AOL.com. Again, National MWM at AOL.com. Okay, let's see what else we got going on here. Wow, I'm not sure what's going on with Brother Kalanji. He was supposed to be calling in right about now. So let's see. Let me just check to see if there's any more announcements for you. I think that was all that we wanted to do for the moment. Okay, oh, sorry, one more. For October the 15th, there is a dinner. That dinner is a tribute to our men warriors, well, actually to all of our warriors, and that's going to happen on October the 15th, and that will happen at the Patterson Palace, which is located in the 1600 block of Cecil B. Moore. That, again, will feature Brother Alton Maddox, Brother Nwali Mbaruti, and Brother Kamal Kabon. And if you are not familiar with those three brothers, I would strongly suggest you take the time to maybe Google them, or, you know, if you have some other way of getting some information about them, you really need to, because these brothers are indeed truly three brothers that you should be more familiar with. Of course, Brother Alton Maddox, in inviting him, of course, to participate in the For Brothers Only Conference, his history certainly has indicated without a shadow of a doubt his commitment, concern, and love for black women. He is the warrior attorney that took on the case of Tawana Brawley. And so he, since then has been disbarred. He has been disbarred now for at least over 15 years. And so what we wanted to do was to make sure that our people nationwide knew that automatically still disbarred. For what? Why do our people not raise these questions? Why do we sit back and just act like we shouldn't get involved in these kinds of things when things happen to those who really step out here to fight for us? So we want to make sure that we bring Alton forward, that we reintroduce him to some or introduce him to others. But the bottom line is he needs to get reinstated. If for no other reason, just out of principle, the fact that black folks are not just going to sit back and let something like that go down. It already has for 15 years. But certainly just because it has happened doesn't mean it has to continue. And so the reality is Alton was disbarred not because he did anything inappropriate or improper according to law or their whole thing, but what he supposedly did was something to the effect of contempt, which is to say something that a judge doesn't like. So you are to take someone's livelihood from them for 15 years for that, and if I remember correctly, Brother Altamana is the one who has the longest period of time of being disbarred in the state of New York. So clearly we're talking about something that is just right in your face racist, okay? But again, we talk about these issues of racism and white supremacy, i.e. global attempted white domination, but yet when it's right in our faces, it's like, okay, so what are we going to do? So these are some of the things that we're going to focus on when Brother Alton comes, who has also now raised the issue about the rape case of the sister Diallo, who, again, the press attempted to demonize, as they did with Tawana Brawley, and, of course, made it seem as if they were not credible because of some other previous things and just sidetracked people all across the board as opposed to focusing on the issues. So we're going to talk more about that a little later on. What we want to do now is get ready to go to the issue of Troy Davis, okay? We want to know from you all, while we're waiting for Brother Kalonji to call in, and we know Steve Biko, he was scheduled to come on a little later on, so hopefully he might call in a little earlier too. But one of the things we wanted to bring to our people's attention is some of the questions around this issue dealing with Troy Davis. You know, people have asked, well, why get involved in this case? Why bother? I mean, there's so many people who are incarcerated. You can't help them all. You can't, you know, just do things. And I mean, it applies to all of them or a lot of them, meaning injustice, meaning being in there and really shouldn't be. Well, of course, that is very true. But certainly we cannot help everyone, but that doesn't mean you don't help someone. So this case of Troy Davis has been out here for approximately 20 years now, and it's not one that people have just dismissed. It's been a continual struggle, and more evidence have come out, more than 10 people. Now here's three major facts that have been presented. One, 7 of the 9 original witnesses in Troy's case have recanted or changed this story. So, obviously, if you have 9 people, not one, not two, 9 people who have now changed their stories, why? 2, 1 eyewitness testified for the first time in 2010 that he saw his relative, not Troy Davis, shoot the police officer. Now, this just happened in 2010. So, again, you know, in fighting these cases, sometimes it takes 10,
15, 20, even 30 years. We know that people who were in jail for 30, 35 years or more have been released after DNA tests prove that they didn't do it. But see, once you kill somebody, obviously, I mean, you know, if you prove something after that, I mean, what is that going to do? So this is why the question around the death penalty has to really be looked at closer, especially by black folks, because we're the ones that's really up in these prisons. So that was point number two. Number three, at least 10 individuals have implicated the alternative suspect as the actual perpetrator, meaning the one person that is said to have done it, there are 10 people who have also said that that person has done it. So, again, I mean, do you really think that all these people just coming forward over the past couple of years just because they ain't had nothing else better to do? I seriously doubt it. And you and I both know that a lot of times folks don't want to get involved in this kind of stuff anyway. So 9 times out of 10, somebody up in there is telling the truth. So, family, what I want you all to think about and also begin to give us some responses to is this. What do you think about the death penalty? Okay, this is dialogue that we don't have in the black community. Usually when you hear this conversation, it's being held in with other folks. You have other folks who are more vocal and more visible when it comes to the issue of the death penalty. Why? When it's primarily black folks in there. So that's one thing that we want you all to think about tonight. And again, what do you think about the death penalty? What's your view about the death penalty? And the other question we want to raise tonight to you is the prison industrialized complex. Why do we not hear more of our people talking about the prison industrialized complex? When it's our people, it's your brother, your sister, your mother, your father, your children. Why are we not talking more about the prison industrialized complex? We talk about Oprah. We talk about, you know, the economy. We talk about a whole bunch of stuff. But there are some things we tend to shy away from as a community, as a people. Why? Why is prison issues one of those things that we kind of just, you know, again, push to the side? Another question that we want to raise to our people, to our community, to our extended family is, who will stand up and fight for real African black liberation today? Now, this question, of course, requires a lot of thought because it's a little ambiguous. What is liberation? What is the struggle or the fight for it? Now, at some point, some of this has to be rebroken down or given some clarity. And that's why we're raising the question, because it seems to be something that, for whatever reason, there seems to be a little cloudiness about it. We need to start having more dialogue about what it is so that we can get to what it is we really need to be doing. Now, some, of course, know that already, and some are really about doing some of those things, but too many obviously aren't. So how do we now begin to kind of bridge the gap and, you know, make this thing balance out a bit more? Well, we're going to make it clear, make it plain, as they say. And in that way, folks won't have any excuses as to why they're not getting busy. Makes a lot of sense, needless to say. Another thing we'd like for you all to consider is, of course, why is it that so many of the social justice issues, the ones that have a major impact on our people. This kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. But why do you feel we tend not to be involved? A perfect example was, I think it was last year, there was a major social justice conference, or not conference, forum, that took place in Detroit. And when I began to ask questions about it, it seemed that most of the group that were involved in that were groups who are also involved with other people. And what I mean by that is there were almost no group that was really representing black folks' interests, at least for the most part. I mean, there might have been a couple up in there, but out of 300 groups or however many it was, you might have found one or two that clearly represented the interests of black African people. Why is that? Why is everything so kind of, you know, put all into a lump sum, you know, for the sake of we all have these same issues of human rights or this or that and the other? I just don't get it. And I really would appreciate if you all could help provide and clarity. So what I'm going to do, because I don't know what's going on with Brother Kalonji, because he really should have called in by now, so I'm hoping that he has a real good explanation for us. But what I'd like to do is get some responses from some of the callers. So let's see. We're gonna put that out there for you. We were trying to wait to open up the chat room until Brother Kalonji called in, but so far we are not seeing it as of yet. So I think I'm going to go to the live line and see if there are any callers who might want to comment on some of what we've talked about thus far. If you have a comment or a question about Troy Davis, you certainly can ask that. If you have an event or an activity coming up that focuses on the campaign to stop the execution, you certainly can share that with us. And also, let's see, the questions that we raised for tonight, which I just gave you, if you have a comment or a question about, I mean, a comment or a opinion about any of that, then we certainly welcome you to bring that to us, too. So let's see. I'm looking at my boards, and let's see. We got a lot of folks, but I'm not seeing anyone indicating that they might want to get on to the mic to share with us what your thoughts might be about some of what we talked about tonight. Okay, so we're going to give you a few more moments. If you would like to be heard tonight, then please push 1. And then I can get an indication that you want to give your opinion or give your view about whatever whatever you'd like to share with us tonight. In the meantime, what I'd like to do is give you one activity, actually two. If you are in, let's see, Atlanta on Tuesday, September the 20th, from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., at Woodruff Park, 91 Peachtree, that's in Atlanta. There's a grassroots international rally to stop the execution of Troy Davis. Okay? Again, that's Tuesday, September the 20th, from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., Woodruff Park, 91 Peachtree Street, Northeast Atlanta, Georgia. Okay, so that's one event that we know is going on Tuesday. There's also one here in Philadelphia that starts at 5 o'clock. It will be at Love Park, which is located at 15th and JFK here in Philadelphia. That's across the street from City Hall. It will begin at 5 o'clock, and it, too, is Stop the Execution of Troy Davis. This particular one is put on by the Black Women's Defense League and in conjunction with the MOVE representatives, Sister Ramona Africa and Sister Pam Africa. And let's see, we have some other groups here, which I'll get for in a moment. But again, these are Black folks that are really kind of, you know, putting this particular rally together as well. And again, that is at 5 o'clock in Philadelphia, 15th and JFK, Stop the Execution of Troy Davis. Okay. We're looking, our boards are looking pretty full. However, we're waiting to see if there's someone that may have a comment or a question for us for tonight. Please feel free to push one if you do. There's a lot of folks tuning in, but apparently y'all don't want to talk tonight. That's strange because usually I have so many folks trying to, okay, I got one right here. Hold on one moment. Okay, caller, you are at, the last digit of your number is 7940. Let's see, I believe you have something you want to share with us. Hold on one moment. I'm trying to bring you in right now. My goodness. We're having some technical difficulties, so let's see. Okay, you should be coming in right about now, caller. Just give us a few moments because the board is acting crazy. Okay. Nope. You're still having a problem. Okay. I'm not able to access you, caller, at 7940, so... tell you what, give us a few more moments because we're just having a few technical difficulties. And, okay, nope, something is going wrong with the board here. So we're going to try something else very briefly. Okay, we're not able to connect to you, caller, and as we said earlier, we kind of suspected we were going to have some technical difficulties. We saw that early on. I'm not able to get to that board, so you hang on. We're going to still try to do so shortly. But in the meantime, we're going to go to another caller. Let's see. Wow. Yeah, our boards are freezing up, family, so just bear with us for a moment or two. And then hopefully we can unfreeze it. But so far I'm not having any luck in doing that. That's really funny. Okay, not able to get to the board to open it up. So what we're going to do is try something else. Okay, let's see if someone else could push one. I just want to do a test because... for some reason, it seems that the boards are locking up, and I want to see if it's on our end or if some other kind of interference is going on. So could someone please, if listening, push one so that I can just see if I can access you, and then that way it'll help us to know if it's our boards or if we're getting some other kind of interference. Okay, great. I see one. Okay, I'm going to try. All right, here we are. Oh, this looks like Brother Kalanji might be calling in now. So let's try that board. Let's see. Okay, and while, let's see. Brother Kalanji, are you on this line?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello? Hello?
Okay. Yes. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Okay. I'm not sure. You know, our boards are really messing up, so I'm not sure exactly what number you are from. But did you have a comment or a question for us tonight?
Yeah, this is Amy. I'm Sister Amy from California.
Hey, Sister Amy, how are you?
How you doing? I was on a radio station today, and I've been paying attention to everything that's going around the world about how we don't get no justice from the law enforcement, the Department of Justice. And the reason why is because mouth out and I'm studying. These are demonic people who's operating in this government system. And that's why I realized that not just that, they are using their different tactics and not giving people justice. And my son was forced to take a deal of 9 years in prison based upon them trying to place my son at a crime scene. That if my son wouldn't have took the 9 years, my son would have had to spend the rest of his life, because they was forcing the black males to take the deal or do life in prison. And I wanted my son to come home, and I'm not happy at all about that. And also being a targeted individual under this technology, science technology of directed energy, which is radiation energy of National Security Agency, which they can send this directed energy to the victim's body and attack them where that person will experience shockwaves over their body. So those are two things that I'm angry behind, but I'm not really angry because I trust in God. But I'm saying I finally was able to get a police report about it, but they said, well, we can't do nothing about it. And then you go to the Department of Justice and you go to the different organizations, I mean different law levels, even the Attorney General's office, they say they put it on the Attorney General, put it on the Department of Justice, put it on the FBI, but they know that's the technology that they're using, because this is our national security technology that was supposed to surveillance and read the people's mind for potential terrorists, but they're using this technology illegally, driving people insane and torturing them and breaking down their central nervous system. That's why you have people all of a sudden, these sudden deaths, people are in wheelchairs and different other things, and these riotous behaviors and people, and all of a sudden the laws say they want to help people, and all the time that law is just protecting criminals. Because for one thing, I will strongly say our children are at risk at the different levels of this demonic department, this demonic government, for one reason. These children are not flying in the drugs. The government, CIA, is flying these drugs in here, distributing them to our children and community, and guns and violence, and acting like that this is, they have to clean the, they have to use this as seeking for justice for the so-called victims in the community, when they are victimizing the community and these people who they are sending away to jail and creating lucrative wealth for their industrialist prison.
Well, Sister Amy, what we're going to have to do is we're going to do this very soon. We're going to have a show like we've done before, which will talk more specifically about this type of issue. But what we want to really do tonight is kind of stay focused on a couple of very key things, which has to do with, one, the prison industrialized complex, two, why our people do not really come forward in the way that we should when it comes to various social justice issues, and we want to also talk about what do our people really feel about the death penalty. Okay, that's kind of where we're at for tonight.
I can speak on why we don't come forward. We got to get out of that
okay,
spirit.
What I'm going to do now, I'm going to come back to you, because I think we have Brother Kalonji finally has called in. So, sister, what you can do is when we get finished talking to Brother Kalonji, just push one again and let me know that that's you, and then maybe we can resume some of this. But we really want to get into this issue of Troy Davis, because we only have a few days to really, you know, kind of deal with that. And I think it would be really in all of our best interest to, you know,
thank
to
God
really try to put as much energy into what we need to do to create, hopefully, the block or the power or whatever you want to call it that will produce clemency for him on Tuesday. All right, my sister?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Good, thanks. Okay, we're going to go to another line here, and I'm not sure if this is Brother Kalonji, but hopefully it is. We will see in one moment. Brother Kalonji, are you on this line?
I'm here.
All right, brother. We've been waiting for you.
Yeah, we got caught up in a roadblock out here.
Oh, really? Where are you?
I'm in Atlanta. I'm actually on my way out right now. I'm going to be heading to Louisiana, but, you know, they like to have roadblocks in the hood, so, you know.
Wow. Good thanks. Well, we have you finally on now. So, again, family, this is Brother Kalonji from the FPT Movement. I'm sorry, FTP Movement. I think I did say that. For the People Movement. And as you can hear, he's calling us from Atlanta. I'm sure there's a lot going on down there, especially given the fact that, you know, this is the area in which, you know, the projected murder is really they're trying to make this occur on Wednesday. So, Brother Kalonji, I told our family earlier that, you know, we would kind of go over this case of Troy Davis. Those who are not familiar with the case, can you give us just a little background on the case, and then we'll come forward to where we're at now?
Okay, cool. Basically, Troy Davis is a victim of American politics. He's a mild-mannered, cool, collective, calm type brother. You know what I'm saying? Someone that we've known to grow. We've grown to know and love. The brother that was accused of murdering a white police officer down in Savannah, Georgia in 1989. Basically, the police had came up with several witnesses, 9 witnesses to be exact, and what happened was throughout the years, 7 of the eyewitnesses that the state produced came forward and said that basically they were coerced and basically told that if they didn't cooperate with the police, then they would be arrested and things of that nature. One of the witnesses was actually a sister who was on parole, who was told that if she didn't say that she saw Troy murder this undercover police officer, that, this off-duty police officer, that she would be arrested and her children would be taken. Another one of the witnesses was illiterate. He didn't know what he was signing. And another witness was actually a 16-year-old boy who was told that he would be arrested as a accomplice, basically. So, the case is out of the 9 witnesses. Again, 7 have recanted their statements. The 8th witness was actually said that the shooter was definitely left-handed and Troy is right-handed. The 9th witness is a man by the name of Sylvester Red Coles, who was actually the person who had pointed the finger at, who had went to the police station and said that he saw Troy Davis do it, when in reality he's the person who is suspected of doing it and who has came forward on numerous occasions throughout the city of Savannah bragging that he actually shot the police officer, Mark McPhail. Troy has been on death row since 1991, and, throughout this time he's maintained his innocence. He's had 3 stay of execution so far, and the 4th death warrant was signed September 6th. He's scheduled to be executed this Wednesday coming, September 21st. And, it's a travesty. You know, we speak to Troy pretty regularly. We've grown to, worked with and became really close with his family. We know that Troy didn't do it, and we know that the system is, it's business as usual, more or less. We traveled to Savannah because one thing that we do as far as our organization is before we get down with any case, we do what we call a people's investigation. We go out and see, okay, what's the deal, before we jump on and throw dirt in our face. We went out to the community, we talked to the elders, we talked to some of his former teachers, coaches, things of that nature, and we couldn't find a person who said that Troy was a bad man. The old folks said that they know that this boy didn't do it. His coaches talked about what a good man he was. I personally went and talked to 2 of the witnesses who had testified, and they basically told us the story. They said, look, man, we were afraid, and had we known what we know now, we wouldn't even said that because of the fact that we didn't think that he'd end up getting a death penalty. We were trying to save our own behind. Savannah is a very racist town or city, shall I say. And, you know, I've never, you know, I'm from Bridgeport, Connecticut. I've never been called a nigger by a white person until I went petitioning in Savannah, Georgia. You understand what I'm saying? It is one of the most racist areas in the South, you know what I'm saying, right alongside places like Mississippi. You know, so they have no problem, white folks down there have no problem with calling you out your name. They have no problem disrespecting you because they know that the Negroes down in Savannah, for the most part, are shook. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We had black folks who were afraid to sign petitions because they were afraid that these white folks would bring the wrath on them. You know, we've had, I personally talked to a black police officer down there, and for the record, I don't talk to police, but, you know, trying to get these petitions signed, you know, I went up to one of them, and I said, you know, I asked him, I said, you know, if you sign this petition to support Troy Davis, and he said to me, man, I know Troy Davis, man, I know he didn't do it. I said, you know, why can I get you to sign the petition? He said, man, you know, it's a lot of red tape and politics and things of that nature. You know, not that, you know, you don't understand. I said, what you mean you don't understand? He said, I grew up with Troy. I said, okay, you grew up with him, then, you know, you should be a character witness. He said, man, you know, I can't do it. So I said, you'd rather sit there and let him die? He said, man, I can't do nothing about it, and walked away. So this is a grown man, a black man, in 2011. You understand what I'm saying? Who's supposed to be working on the side of justice? And even he knows, working on the police department down there, that, you know, he has about much authority as I do, basically. You understand what I'm saying? I'd like to point out that Troy's mother, who recently passed back in April, was a civil rights worker. His father, what a lot of folks are not saying, was actually a Savannah police officer himself. And Troy's father, if he wanted to arrest a white person, he couldn't do it. He had to call the police station, and they had to send a white officer to determine on whether the person was worth arresting, or excuse me, worthy of him arresting. You know, so Savannah, again, for those of you that don't know and have seen all of this tourist-type things and think that it's just some spot that you want to go support, again, it's one of the most racist cities in the United States, and I think that it should be shut down.
What are some of the things that FPP movement has been doing in the past couple of days, Brother Kalonji?
Okay, we've been doing several things. One is we've been out petitioning. We actually went in with a few other organizations, including AMC International and NAACP and folks like that. We went and delivered 693,000 petitions that have been signed from the people, stating that, you know, that it's outrageous and they don't think the choice should die. You know what I mean? So we've been doing petitions, we've been doing press conferences. We've had we joined in on a rally last night and joined folks like Dick Gregory and, you know, Al Sharpton and some of the usual suspects who, you know, were, speaking out against it, you know, at Ebenezer Baptist Church last night. We have a rally planned for this Tuesday, which is a grassroots international rally to stop the execution of Troy Davis because of the fact that we are positively displeased with some of the folks who are taking the lead right now. And we think that black folks have to stand up and open their mouths because
That's
of the
right.
fact that right now, even when we're talking about fighting for our rights, we don't trust ourselves to deliver us out of this out of captivity. You understand what I'm saying? We think that, you know, some great white folks are going to come along and take us to the promised land. You understand what I'm saying? And we got to begin to believe in ourselves because the reality is the power is with the people and it's not the state. The power is not with anyone other than us. You understand what I'm saying? If we say we're the original people, if we say that, you know, we built pyramids and talk about how great we were and all that type of stuff, then we got to show and prove at this stage of the game. So we said that we wanted to bring folks to the table. We wanted to bring folks like the POCC and Malcolm X Grassroots Movement and UNIA and so many others. And, so we are planning to get out there on this Tuesday, which will be the day after a clemency hearing that will be heard on by the Georgia Board of Pardon and Paroles on this Monday. You know what I'm saying? They got to decide his fate. as if they got the right to decide when, you know, decide an expiration date on any person. You know, so we'll be out on Tuesday. On Monday, we'll know what they're saying. And on Tuesday, regardless of whatever they say, we're saying that we are positively displeased with the fact that this man has been held for this amount of time and that he should not be executed, and we would not lay down or sit back and just talk junk like we always do and say that, you know, man, you know, we should what we should do and talk about is a shame and all that type of stuff. So, you know, we talk about being action oriented, and we talk about bringing the people out to it because of the fact that only the people can save us from this. Like Harriet Tubman said, ain't nobody gonna save us but us.
That's right. Ain't no doubt about it. And one of the things that I mentioned earlier, Brother Kalaji, is in my concern, and certainly your concern as well, and many others, is that when we talk about movement, when we talk about a struggle, you know, people are even becoming leery about using the word struggle. You know, we've become so metaphysically inclined and so, you know, trying to say the correct and the proper thing that we are now just trying to dismiss some very important, not only historical ideas and concepts, but we now trying to make it seem like, well, you know, struggle means I'm doing something against something. I mean, we try to philosophize everything now. So I'm saying that to say, you know, I'm so glad to hear you and others continue to make certain that people understand that when we talk about resistance, we have no problems with talking about struggle.
Right.
Because it is, in fact, that. And until we're free, until there's some level of liberation for real, then it can be nothing else but a struggle.
Right. Right, right. I think I say like my father told me, man. My father just transitioned last month. But one thing he's always telling me is that black folks is full of ish. You understand what I'm saying? We talk big. You know what I'm saying? We talk about what we're going to do. We talk about we play the part. We wear the costumes. Walk around with the big jugs of waters and staffs and the flip flops and all that type stuff. And you know, act as if, you know, we really gonna do something. We know we're not gonna bust a Concord grape in a fruit fight. At the end of the day, you know what I'm saying, like UEP Newton says to the Black Panther Party, he said, you know, don't watch what I say, watch what I do. He said, I could talk all day, but action is supreme. You understand what I'm saying? So it's 2011 right now, and I'm sure that most of the listeners that are online right now are of the age that they know that we have a responsibility. You understand what I'm saying? And to me, and, you know, I'm just saying this, you know, and folks can take it however they want to. To me, it is selfish and it is ancestral treason for us to sit back and not do nothing. You know what I'm saying? If our ancestors and our elders sit back and move like some of us move, then we all be dead today. You understand what I'm saying?
That's right.
Because of the fact that half of us are lazy as hell, you know what I'm saying, and the rest are crazy as hell. You understand what I'm saying? You got folks that are walking around with no political education, leading masses of people. You got folks who get on the internet talking real loud, you know what I'm saying, and banging from behind the keyboards. But in reality, when it comes to us fighting and swinging and things of that nature, they don't want to do that. Let me tell you something, man. You know, it's time out from letting these people treat us the way we've been treated. We're going to die anyway. You understand what I'm saying? So we should die like men and women if we're going to die. You understand what I'm saying? Instead of crawling on our knees like punks and puppets. You understand what I'm saying? It ain't about putting on those dusty-ass uniforms. It ain't about jumping on YouTube and making a bunch of noise. It ain't about, you know, getting on Facebook and talking a bunch of rah-rah or blog talk or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to get in this thing right here, man, you know, like my man, Emmanuel Jamil, former H.R. Brown said, you know what I'm saying, you can't be no minute, man. You can't just jump in and out and talk about I was just playing. You understand what I'm saying? The state is very serious. And if any of us that's listening on this line right now, if you're not giving your heart, your body, your mind, and your soul to this struggle, then, you know, just leave it alone, man. Because of the fact that, you know, we dying every day. We got political prisoners who are rotting away that have been in prison for over 50 years. You got folks like Mumia who's on death row. You got folks like Troy Davis whose life is in the hand of others. And here we are, here we are talking about how bad we are, how bold we are, and how much knowledge we got, and how much high sciences we got, but we can't stop them from sticking a needle in one of our people's arms when we know they dead wrong. We know they wrong. We know they wrong. And for the most part, a lot of us aren't saying anything, man. You know, it saddens me because of the fact that I personally reached out to most of the so-called national leadership that I could think of. You understand what I'm saying? And a few of them got on board with what we're doing with this campaign. And I got to say, a few of them, because their names wasn't at the forefront, you know, they didn't respond. And I know they got my message. You know what I'm saying? But I tell you like this right here, man, you know, I pray, you know, that that they do not take this man's life. And, you know, in the event that they do, for those of you who sat back on the sideline, and for those of you who remain quiet, just, you know, stay clear of us, man. Because we ain't got nothing to say to you. You know what I'm saying? We're not interested in any talking. We're not interested in any lollygagging. You ain't got to shake our hand. You ain't got to give no peace signs or nothing like that. Just keep it moving. You know what I'm saying? That's how I feel about it.
Well, brother, you definitely are expressing, you know, some of the things that we've been talking about here at New Day Resurrection since the time we started, and certainly today as well. In fact, earlier I made it very clear that I'm going to even start stepping it up even more so, because what I'm finding is by there being so few and so little being really said about some of what's going on, that people think that that's their cue to just continue and to really make it worse, in that
right.
They're not saying about what's going on, the treason and the betrayal in our community, the sellouts and things of that nature. I was mentioning earlier, Brother Kalaji, that here in Philly and now in Detroit, there's this project called Black Men Engagement.
Right.
And when we did the research on it, we saw, oh, and by the way, it's coming to Georgia. It's coming to Georgia,
okay.
too. It's funded by the Knight Foundation.
Okay.
And by the Open Hand Society. I'm sorry, the Open Society. I call it the Open Hand. The Open Society. The bottom line is these are two white entities, one that owns newspapers all over the country, and the other that is doing global white supremacy stuff, and it's all on their website. And they're now engaging from the ages of 14 up for men to write their stories about what great things Black men are doing in the community. And what they do is accumulate your data, because they know who wrote it. They know what part of the city you came from. They know your age. They get background information. And all this stuff is used for assessment to develop further policies. And they even say this on their website. But they don't say this on the site that says Black Men Engagement. This is a good thing for the community because it helps to share the stories. The bottom line is, I've got people here that I've talked to about it, and some, oh, that's a good thing. That's just wonderful. They're going to talk about Black men doing wonderful things. And
right.
I'm like,
right.
Wait a minute.
Right. Right. No, that's
so
ridiculous.
We've got to
know.
Stand up and speak out, because if we don't, there are people who really do want to know the truth.
I'm sorry, is there one else?
Yes. So I'm just saying, you know, I'm so happy. I'm so, you know, I'm just proud to really hear when our brothers and sisters take the types of positions that are so necessary, and not because there's a look for a pat on the back, because as a matter of fact, what I'm learning is we become more hated, and it's all good. I mean, you know, it's just,
right.
It's okay.
Right. Yeah, I don't want no props. I don't want no pat on the back because of the fact that as much as we say we're doing, we ain't doing nothing. We're not doing enough because of the fact that we're still in the same situation we've been in. You know what I mean? So I don't need any props. We don't need no thumbs up on no Facebook page. We don't need no shout-outs, no applause. We don't need none of that. All we need is for folks to get involved in what it is we're doing. So if you say, you know, you're doing good work, tell me that while we're in the middle. Tell me that when we're in the
That's
field.
That's right.
You understand what I'm saying? Tell me that. Tell me that while we actively engaged, unless you have some type of physical or mental handicap or something like that that could prevent you from getting out there and doing what it is we have to do. Bunchy Carter of the Black Panther Party said a long time ago, he said, nigga, do something if you don't do nothing but spit. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm.
Don't stand around and just talk about what a great job we're doing, because right now that's played out, all the way played out. Nobody cares about that no more, man, because of the fact that I know that our brothers and sisters are dying daily in these streets. I know that 92-year-old Captain Johnson was gunned down here in Atlanta, you know what I'm saying, in our own home. I know that Sean Bell was gunned down. I know that Oscar Grant and so many other brothers and sisters are being murdered in the streets daily, some whose names we'll never know. You understand what I'm saying? So all of the applause and the fanfare and the handshakes and all that, it means absolutely nothing, because right now we're at war and we're in dire straits, and you know what I'm saying? And forgive me for those of you who are sincere with what it is you're saying. You know what I'm saying? That don't mean that we don't love you or nothing like that, but get involved. If you really love what we're doing, show us. You understand what I'm saying? It's like a relationship. When a man and a woman get together, the woman don't always want to hear, I love you, and you're not showing her nothing other than some words. You know what I'm saying? You can't say you love her and
that's
then
right.
turn around and beat her to death. You understand what I'm saying?
That's
the reality
right.
is,
mm-hmm.
you know, we got to get involved, that's man. Either you engaged or you're not, man. Either you for our people or you against our people. That's the bottom line. Nothing else other than that, man. There's no gray area. There's no in-between, none of that type stuff, man. You know what I mean? So, you know, I applaud you, Empress Chi. You know what I'm saying? From the time I met you, you've been consistent with your work. You know what I mean? And, you know, I'm happy to call you a comrade, and anything that we can do on our end, you know what I'm saying, we all the way with it. To the listeners out there that's listening to the sound of my voice, you know, I pray that we all do the best we can. You understand what I'm saying? Because, in fact, we're not knocking what you're doing. We're knocking what we're not doing. And the criticism, you know what I'm saying, we criticize ourselves first, and we hard on ourselves, so you know we got to give it to the next person. So, again, man, we love y'all. We love being African. We love being black people. You know what I'm saying? And all power to the people. Let's win. Victory is near. But we got to take it if we
all
want
right,
it.
All right, all right, Brother Kalaji. Now, before you leave us for tonight, brother, I just want our family to know that we will have you back very soon, because we want to talk about your book. We want to focus tonight on, of course, Troy Davis, but I would be remiss if I did not mention the fact, because all of this is connected in that what we've been talking about is the responsibility of the black man and the black woman in all regards. So in talking about it, we have to look at how do we further develop that. And so Brother Kalanji's book is one of those types of books that we must talk about. We need information. We talked earlier about black men coming to this session in October just for brothers. Now, Brother Kalanji is going to be joining us. So you'll be able to greet him if you're in the Philadelphia area, because he and other brothers, we talked about him, Wally Mubarudi, Alton Maddox, Brother Kamal Cabone. If you know anything about these brothers, you know they ain't no joke. They are very serious brothers. And so we're doing this for a reason. And what Brother Kalanji mentioned was the fact that one of the things that really pushed me to the edge, and then I said, I'm no longer going to just talk. We're going to do something. And I think I mentioned this to you, Brother Kalani, when I called and told you about the 21-year-old sister here in Philadelphia that was in front of the court building in the broad daylight. Three men jumped on her and beat her to death, and she is pregnant. And
wow.
Nobody jumped in. And they got on the TV that night and talked about, yeah, did you see that, man? Yeah, that was really something.
There were brothers there?
So, yes,
brothers were there? Wow.
So see, what we've done since February is started tracking down those kind of reports on a national level, et cetera, et cetera. And that's one of the reasons why this conference for brothers only became an existence, so that an ongoing dialogue with strong black men that really love black women could now come up with, this is how we're going to handle this stuff now.
Right on.
So these are some of the things that will be discussed in October. So family, Brother Kalanji, give out your contact information, definitely the website for FTP.
Right on. Our website is www.fdp.org. fttmovement.name.com. That's www.fttmovement.name.com. My email address is defendingrapport@yahoo.com. That's defendingrapport@yahoo.com. And I'm looking forward to coming to Philly. We actually have a book tour for How to Build a People's Army. My book, and we're gonna kick it off in Philly. That's gonna be the first day actually, you know, on the East Coast.
All right.
So I'm really looking forward to it. And you know, whatever we can do to aid and assist with our people across the board, man. You know, I pray to the Creator that you know, that the strength is given. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, it's not about the label, it's about the content. You know what I'm saying? It's not about whether you got dreads, bald heads, a perm, or a jerry curl. You know what I'm saying? You know, we all in this thing together, man, and let's play to win. You know, so, you know,
right.
Again, thank you all for being alive, you know what I'm saying, and making it, you know what I'm saying, through all of this this strife and trauma. And, you know, like I said again, man, we pray that that we can make it together, you know, because that's what it's all about.
All right. Good things. And, brother, again, we're going to get you back very soon to specifically talk about the book, but for now we're going to stay focused and deal with this issue with Brother Troy Davis. Coming up after Brother Kalonji, we're going to extend our show tonight, family. We're going to go to 12:30 tonight because we got started a little late tonight. Was having some tech difficulties as well. And we're going to be bringing on in a few minutes. I think we're ready. I think I see him coming up, Brother Stephen Biko. He's going to be joining us in a few minutes. Do you know Brother Steve Biko, Brother Kalonji?
Absolutely. That's the comrade down at ATL. We roll with the African Community Centers. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So,
well,
yeah,
look, before you go, you want to holler at him real quick?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hold on. Let me see if I can catch him in. Brother Steve, you there?
Hey, greetings, family. How y'all doing?
All right, Brother Biko.
All right, Brother Kalonji. What's going
all
on,
right.
Brother? How you doing?
Hey, man, trying to survive America. I'm feeling real good right now. We swinging, you know what I'm saying? You know, we still
something. Oh, yeah, yeah. No doubt. I missed you last night at the rally. I was out there, but, you know, it was a gang of people, so.
Right on. Well, you'll see me on Tuesday. You know, we're rocking on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Woodruff Park. Well, family, I got to get ready to go. I got to go hit the road. We
right,
heading out
brother,
of town
brother.
Right now.
Good thanks, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
Right on. Thank y'all,
right.
Man. Be strong.
Yeah.
Power to the people.
All right, brother. Salute to Continua. Okay, family, we're going to now move on. And, of course, as you just heard, we have our brother Steve Biko joining us. And that was Brother Kalonji, and we thank him for giving us that report. Of course, we want to reiterate that come this weekend, there's a lot of activities that have been going on, and certainly there are more that are going to be going on tomorrow and Monday here in Philadelphia. Monday at 5 o'clock, we will be at Love Park. We're going to do a rally and speak out. We're going to, of course, make certain that we let our voices be heard in regard to stopping the execution that has been scheduled for Wednesday. But we want to also make sure that people hear us in terms of our displeasure and then some as it pertains to the whole idea of the prison industrialized complex and certainly the issue of the death penalty. Because we know for real, who that's really for. But anyway, we're going to go back to our line, and we have Brother Steve Biko with us. Of course, we had Brother Steve on a few weeks ago, and as I said earlier, he's going to be coming on periodically because the Lean Women Movement is, in fact, embracing the 10-10-50 program. We're going to have our own rendition of it that we're going to be talking about, but we certainly support. And we will be bringing to you a lot of information and updates as we proceed. We're making certain that people understand and overstand the idea and the reality of practical, functional, and operational unity. Okay, these are more than just some words, and you're going to hear that when you, or rather see it, when you hear more about 10-10-50, when you hear more about the BBB code, when you hear more about In the Black. These are operational,
practical operational kinds of things to make certain that our people are able to move forward in not only a self-determined manner, but in a victorious manner. So really back to our line, and Brother Biko, what's going on?
Hey, Empress. Everything is blessed and going well. Everything is well. I give thanks for the honor and the privilege to join you again. And, of course, you're doing it big and working hard for our people, so we got to give you your props and all that as well.
Good thanks. Now, we talked to, of course, Brother Kalanji, and we didn't really focus on last night. So can you give us a little bit of insight into the rapture that took place last night?
Well, sure. One, I definitely want to say peace to all the listeners out there, and I want to thank you all for just being of the mindset to be plugged in to the right
That's
information.
Right.
In the right information channel. You know, the rally in March was good. It was successful. There were thousands of people out. And every color, race, every ethnicity, every age. From, you know, the elders all the way down to babies who were out there. Folks in wheelchairs and on crutches, you know, but marching and standing up for Brother Troy. One of the things that was challenging, though, is the mantras to our movement. See, we must still be in the civil rights era because we're still using civil rights era mantras. So, we rally with the people, and of course we have different segments of our people. So there's a Christian-based segment of our people. But they don't understand that the majority of the people coming out there need to hear more than your Christian songs. Because your songs of Christianity or your songs of Zion or whatever, Jubilee, whatever you call them, is not freeing the people. It's not transforming the people. It's not helping the people overcome, you know, the present day agents of wickedness. So to sing this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. At, you know, at a march where a man's life is on the line, that's the wrong song. They keep using this mantra of no justice, no peace. See, at some point in time, we got to question the people that are saying this. What do you mean? No justice, no peace. Because what that means to me is if you're saying if there is no justice, there will be no peace.
No peace, that's right.
So why are we having a peaceful march? Why are we having a peaceful rally? Why are we having a peaceful candlelight vigil? Why are we having a peaceful anything? Because this ain't the first issue of injustice.
That's right.
It's not going to be the last. And the reason why I know this is not going to be the last issue of injustice is because an injustice system can only do what it was created to do. How do I know that? And how is that truth? Because this same system of injustice that we are still oppressed by and terrorized by, it's the same system of injustice that was in place when this country was founded. We were considered less than human beings or three-fifths of a human being. We were considered property when this system was put into place. And if a system can only do what it was created to do, then why are we surprised 400-some-odd years later that we're still dealing with injustice? See, as Brother Kalanji was talking about, stop worrying about what people saying and watch what they do. But listen to what they say and then hold them accountable to what they say by their actions or lack of action. So these kind of mantras. And they had Ben Jealous of the NAACP speak.
Mm-hmm.
The head of the national head of Amnesty International, Larry Cox, I think his name is, he spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Luther King III spoke.
Oh my!
The thing is, for Martin Luther King III to speak, and for him to use his father's quote, that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice
mm-hmm.
everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you're not telling the people that you should feel threatened as well. We're just talking about Troy Davis's life being threatened. Well, see, there was injustice that went down before Troy Davis was convicted.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't addressed. So he came in the line of injustice. It wasn't like he was the first start of injustice against our people.
Yeah.
So at no point in time have we made this threat real to each and every one of us who know about injustice. We don't feel threatened. We just feel like, well, that's them. Well, he had to do something wrong. And the thing, Empress, about the Troy Davis case in particular that a lot of people are missing is the glaring contradictions in him being convicted of murder and now the evidence that is available that definitely leads to reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Seven of the nine trial or prosecution witnesses who testify under oath during trial, seven of nine have since recanted their testimony with no charges of perjury coming from the district attorney's office.
Mm.
Secondly, there was no physical evidence linking Troy to the crime, which means no DNA, which means no gun. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Then,
yes.
The police officer, the white police officer who was killed that night and that Troy was convicted of murder, one, he was off duty in an area that was known for drug sales and drug users.
Mm-hmm.
And when this white police officer was killed, the autopsy results revealed that he had cocaine in his system.
What?
Now, that alone.
This is
no wonder. Even Amnesty International is not pressing that fact. And I got that directly from Troy Davis's mother, Virginia, and his sister, Martina, and working with them on the door-to-door campaign getting petition signed back in 2009. So why isn't anyone, as I was just speaking to Reverend Al Sharpton on his radio program on Friday, and I informed him that this police officer had cocaine in his system when he was killed. He didn't even know about it, or he certainly acted as though he was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the killer part is this. This is what, as Brother Kalandia was speaking to, this is why we got to stop playing games, Empress, because he was convicted, prosecuted by a white district attorney down in Savannah, Georgia. The county is called Chatham County, but that's
mm-hmm.
what makes up part of Savannah, Georgia. The Chatham County district attorney at the time of Troy Davis's trial and conviction was a white man. And he is the one who assigned execution warrants or requested execution warrants on Troy four other times in the past. And we were able to get a stay of execution or to appeal to a higher court, you know, at the same time. But now,
mm-hmm.
back in 2009, a black district attorney was elected for Chatham County. Same as Attorney Chisholm. I believe I don't have his first name, but I know his name is a District Attorney Chisholm, a brother,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
who was elected by a majority black constituency. So for the last couple of years, nothing has happened on Troy Davis's case. He hasn't had another execution date set,
right,
even after the Supreme Court denied his case or whatever. You know, they said it wasn't enough evidence.
Right.
So that was supposed
right.
to be the last legal maneuver, and that's been a while. So So this case has been sitting here now, stagnant for a while, gone off the radar. And then this black district attorney is the one who requested the warrant for execution from the judge in order to have an execution date set. A black man.
Wow.
Voted in office by black people. And black people are not down in Chatham County hollering and screaming, kill Troy Davis. So they didn't put pressure on him to request this execution warrant. So what's the hidden hand in this situation?
Wow.
Who's behind the scenes manipulating things and getting this black man who knows about this case and knows about all of the new evidence, the recantations, and all of that? He went ahead and did this now. Now have us scrambling to try to save this brother's life, getting a stay, execution, clemency, or whatever. But all we've got to do, Empress, is go back to District Attorney Chisholm starting Monday morning and put pressure on him to request that the judge withdraw that order. If he withdraws his request for the execution warrant, 9 times out of 10, the judge is going to grant it because he's the one who requested it.
Okay.
So while we're working on the Georgia Board of Paroles and Pardons, over 650,000 signatures for the petition for clemency have been turned into the Parole and Pardons Board on Friday. 650,000.
Wow.
With no movement. A major march in downtown that was covered by all the national media, no movement from them. So we can't just rely on the Parole and Pardon Board when we got a black man who's a member of our community who has initiated this thing. You know what I'm saying?
So, Brother Rico, tell me, now, okay, if clemency is granted, that's the end of it. However, if a stay of execution is granted, that's not. Can you give us some clarity on that?
Well, I'm not a lawyer. I'm going to tell you what I know. Clemency is really reserved for those that the facts have come out in a court case. Okay? And it's been accepted by some legal body in order to achieve clemency. Clemency, they don't just give clemency to anybody. This is why I think it's an improper strategy to just focus strictly on the Board of Paroles and Pardons when these are people who have been selected into office. We would be better served to also put similar pressure on the district attorney who started this whole mess. Had he not done what he did, we wouldn't be sitting here right now. See, it's similar to President Obama talking about, I want you to elect me to be president because I represent change that we can believe in. But when you get in office, you don't point the finger to the people who created the problem. The Bush administration. The neoconservatives. The Zionists. You want to go ahead and take all of this weight and responsibility and place it on yourself and your administration. And then don't want to be held accountable when you fail to produce this change that you pledged we could believe in. So his first mistake was not continuing. As soon as the economy went down, he should have started with his black attorney general started an investigation on the Bush administration immediately. But, of course, I know he can't do that. He's
right.
You shouldn't come into that position if you ain't ready to give your life. It's a position of power that's going to automatically put you and your family's life at risk.
Right.
So if you're going to risk your life as a
if
president.
If you do something contrary to what they really want you to do.
Well, he's really showing that he doesn't represent change that we were believing in.
Right.
Because if he did, he would have immediately started dealing with the problem causers. You can never solve a problem until you first identify the root cause. And so, yeah, okay, let's get this, you know, the stimulus bill together. Let's save these banks. All right, okay. You so-called did that. With no strings attached, you give them hundreds of billions of dollars. Great. Then, well, let's focus on health care. And you start focusing on health care after you lose the majority in the Congress, the Democratic majority in the Congress. So you got this weak, asinine health care bill through, which the majority of the effects won't even, or the majority of the bill won't even take effect until after he leaves office, to after 2012. So that means that if you don't win re-election, then your whole plan is going to be dismantled and thrown out by the Republican presidential, you know, person.
Right, right.
So this is the game that we've been playing. So when it comes to our people and our community, Brother Kalaji was right on point where we got to begin to start holding ourselves accountable. And so when you got black people now who are now calling for the death of another black person in the face of so many questions and so much support from President Jimmy Carter to Congress people to celebrities, even the Pope of Rome.
Yeah.
And threw his little pointy hat into the ring. You know what I'm saying? So this is a game that's being played, and the strategy, in my opinion, is not about being victorious. And it really
Empress
to a bigger issue, that if we as a community are unable to come together and save one black life, we are looking at an uphill battle for real when it comes to dealing with health care for our people, jobs for our people, housing for our people, food for our people, safety for our people. And we can't now, one, take the lead. Amnesty International should not be at the lead of fighting for Troy Davis's life, because Amnesty International deals with global cases of injustice. So Troy Davis is just one of many.
Right, that's right.
So why would we put our hope and stock in an organization whose focus is not of, by, and for the black community? Because we slaves. And because for
whatever reason, brother, and it still baffles me, but while I ponder why this is still happening today, of course we work towards dismantling it, and that is, for whatever reason, and this is what I started off earlier with, and that is, it seems that when it comes to especially social justice issues today, or things that we feel are somewhat of injustices or whatever, if it's not white people involved in it, you don't see us. There's something really interesting about that whole reality and scenario. There's just something extremely interesting about that. It gotta let it. See, the enemy certainly is seeing that. It's seeing that black folks, on our own accord, is not calling, especially in a national kind of way, for the addressment or the alleviation of certain types of atrocities.
Right.
Why is that?
Because those who know Empress understand that this is life and death for all of us. See, Dr. King knew that stepping out on behalf of his people in justice back in those days was putting his life on the line. He knew it. He came into it clear that I'm going to be a marked man by this racist society when I take a stand and go against the grain. Malcolm X was clear that his life was going to be on the line for what he represented. Elijah Muhammad, Marcus Garvey, Nat Turner, Harriet Tubman, they knew. Today, you got people getting involved in community issues, in particular issues dealing with racism and injustice, who are only getting involved because their lives are not on the line. But they want to make it appear to the people that they're speaking out, because we have been so accustomed to allowing politicians to politic us that when it comes to our own leadership, whether they're politicians, spiritual leaders, social or civic leaders, they've learned that same approach. Just tell them anything. Just make it look like you're going to do something. And because we haven't had that operational, practical, and functional unity interconnected and exemplified in our, among our people and in our communities, then we still don't get it. So we still don't have one common objective that we all can get behind and be successful at. Not one.
So, you know, there's something else that I think I need to point out, because we're going to be running out of time shortly, and it's this. You know, there's so many reasons, as Brother Rico just mentioned or just said very clearly, there's so many reasons why this particular case warrants action. And I'm going to also say, as a woman, as a sister, as a mother, as a daughter, I've had... Troy Davis' sister on my show, I believe twice in the past couple of years. And I recently learned, I had tried to reach her a couple of weeks ago because, you know, Troy came to my mind and I wanted to get her on the show even before this situation happened. And I kept trying to reach her and I wasn't able to. And I just recently learned that she had been ill. I didn't know that.
She's ill, you said?
That she was ill, yes.
Oh, yes, yes, she's confined to a wheelchair.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I did not know that. And I'm saying that because I want our people to know how diligently, how hard she fought ongoingly for Troy to have justice and to be released. And when I was able to interact with her, I mean, she was, you know, powerful, fiery, strong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
while
it really kind of
threw
me off a little bit, you know, to hear that she had been ill.
Yeah, because she was actually going through chemotherapy while she was on the front line fighting for Troy and raising a young son and taking care of her mother. So, I mean, the family has been the example of commitment, dedication, sacrifice.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So it ain't like Troy has been out here on his own. He and his family don't even like him. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Or want to support him. No. Had it not been for them hollering and screaming and making some noise, we would not have even gotten the kind of, you know what I'm saying, attention about it. So I want to end with this. All of these cases that are pervasive, these issues of injustice and racism and inequity and even black-on-black violations are occurring on a continual basis because we have not put in a stopgap measure, which means we might not be able to stop this whole waterfall, but at least we can dam this thing on up so it can slow it down some and we can kind of get our bearings. But we haven't even thrown any blocking or measure in because there's not enough of us involved. So 10-10-50 is a monthly plan of community participation. It's how each and every one of us who say we're concerned can be actively involved and measure that monthly involvement through 10-10-50, which is just saying volunteer 10 hours of your time with some good work that you are interested in or passionate about.
Right.
Whoever you give your time to, donate a minimum of $10 to help fund and support that good work. And then the 50 is saying make a conscious effort to transfer or redirect at a minimum $50 from your monthly spending, money that you normally spend every month anyway outside of our community, transfer or redirect at a minimum $50 to a black-owned business or service provider. And in addition to 10-10-50, exercise the principle of Imani or faith. So it's 10-10-50 plus Imani every 30 days by those of us who say we are concerned. We're not looking for everybody in our community right now. We're looking for those who say they are concerned about our condition. Because once you express concern, now you're responsible for that truth that you've spoken. You're accountable to the truth that you've spoken. And it's really a way to shut a lot of us up that's out there talking about what's going on, what happened, what ain't happening, what need to happen. Excuse me, bro, sis. What you doing? I mean,
that's
every
right.
month, what are you doing? I've been doing
that's
something,
right.
man. Don't ask me what I've been doing. No, what are you doing today, every 30 days, to make sure that you are part of the solution? Don't tell me what you did. You sound like them boys in jail all the time, talking about how big they used to ball, and they was holding it down, and they was a shot caller, and they was the baddest dude. Yeah, but you sitting in jail with me. You can't even make bond. But you was a big baller. So this is where we got to really press ourselves on and hold ourselves to standards, to criteria, and to codes of conduct and ethics to help to maintain our continuity and our perpetuity in building and developing unity, which is the prerequisite for power. I mean, black power. You just want any kind of power, then you know, you ain't got to have that prerequisite. But if
that's
you
right.
want black power, black unity is the prerequisite for black power.
And on that note, family, one of our brothers, our dear brother Shango, called Kofu Shango Wande, sent us a link. And for those of you who might be interested in seeing it, Brother Beekley, you've got to see this thing called Black Power, the way the white man defines it. Send us an email, National MWM. You're going to love this video. I just got a little message. We are running out of time. Brother Beekley, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. We're going to get you back very soon, so that you can give us more information about 10-10-50. Give out your website or email address real quick. We only got about 1 minute, but go ahead.
Real good. Thank you so much. Y'all can check out 10-10-50, this basic plan for community participation. The website is www.10-10-50.org. So that's 10-10-50. .org. You can go there and check that out. And, of course, check us out at the Collective Black People Movement website, the Collective Black People Movement, the acronym, CBPM.org. And that's how you can get plugged in with the Collective Black People Movement, who is a proud sponsor, promoter, and performer of 10-10-50. And I give thanks to you again, Empress Chi, for your wonderful work. And I look forward to us continuing to build in the spirit of love, operational, practical, and functional unity.
Absolutely. And I thank you, my brother and family. We thank all of you for tuning in. We're going to do some special broadcasting in the next couple of days as we proceed to make certain that you are abreast of what's going on with this situation with our brother Troy Davis. Until then, family, we love you much, much, much. Much love, much respect. Remember, we cannot ever, ever, ever have any real peace until there is justice. Remember, there can be no Hotep without my aunt. Until next week, family, much love, much respect. Tutanana.